This is the new era. This is the new band, and we're unbreakable.
We can rebuild him. We have the technology. We can make him better than he was. Better, stronger, faster. Actually, better, stronger,
is that a
faster.
Line from Starship Troopers or something?
No, it's actually the Million Dollar Man.
$6 Million Man. I know that, and
I don't even know what that is.
We Brits don't do excitement, so this is the best you're gonna get.
Chris is bringing the noise today, apparently.
Speaking of vanilla,
it's just I don't understand why.
I don't think anyone does. I don't think Travis Green understands.
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust. This is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com and CKNW.com. Here they are, fresh from folding towels, sharpening skates, and washing jock straps. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, now heard on Overtime Media as well as CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am Chris at Lightforce, joining a hotbox by the entire gang. We got Matley at Matley underscore 61, Anna Forsyth at A4Sy03, and Adam Ovenel Carter at Adam FOC. How is everyone doing now that the season is over?
Doing all right. I didn't get to watch the last two games, so it kind of just came and went for me. It was a weird, almost like surreal feeling.
Yeah. I did watch the last few games and not too happy about having done so. So, yeah, it feels a little deflating until we get the news tomorrow.
I'm not going to lie. I missed the entire St. Louis game.
Yeah. And
I didn't watch any of it. I didn't even see the highlights of it,
actually. I don't think they exist.
Well, I did see the highlights. Yeah, what do you mean it didn't exist? There was a very nice goal and a classic PD one-timer.
Oh, was it a one-timer? See, yeah. I didn't even watch the highlights.
It was just a long game.
I think the PD goal was just to definitively show that Binnington is not the
Calder. Yeah, we need to stop with that. That's like, stop with the Binnington. Yeah, come
does
on.
Not make
come
a
on.
Rookie season.
Anyhow. So what's
we got a lot to get into.
I know,
today, by the
I know.
Way. Like, so we are. This is the night before Christmas, or is it the night before April Fool's?
Hey, when do you actually leave?
Next Wednesday.
You did say you weren't going to be here for the draft lottery, so here we
are.
Without
I also didn't
a plan
know,
for
no,
it.
No, hang on. This was before I said before we knew the draft lottery was going to be on the 9th, like super early.
Yeah, it's usually on my birthday.
Oh, can I just ask, we haven't actually talked, like, I was going to actually save this for off the air, but I might put something together last minute for tomorrow post-draft lottery. Nothing live, but something post-draft lottery.
I was going to say, can we not just have a love-in between you and
Yeah, just record
Adam?
Our phone conversation tomorrow?
That's what
I was
going
to say, if you want to come by tomorrow, either because you're not going to be able to make it for the draft lottery, right?
I will be...
You're like on a
yeah,
boat.
Yeah, I'm
it,
on
that.
The... Oh, it's tough.
I assume the actual drawing of the balls takes place at 5:45.
I probably won't
so.
Be at your house till about then or 6 o'clock.
Yeah, so that's perfect timing though.
Well,
and so I'm thinking we may be able to do something with friend of the show Cam Robinson.
Oh, okay, I was gonna say like we have Discord.
We do have Discord.
We could and you guys can all jump into patron chat and talk to each other and. The
Turn
patrons
up.
Can listen in. And
it, failing that, we could do that as well.
And a friend of the show, Cam Robinson, could be given...
But I only bring up Cam because we obviously haven't had him on in quite some time. His April rankings are coming out very soon as well. He will be in town for the draft, in which we'll do something for the draft as well. But it'd be a great opportunity to do a little quick mock draft with Cam Robinson after the draft lottery is conducted.
Are we going to get a friend of the show, Cam Robinson, here in the hot box? Really showing
I don't
a good
know.
Time?
I don't,
that's almost rude
if he
to
comes,
do
yeah.
If friend of the show Cam Robinson comes into the hot box, he will no longer be friend of the show. He
exactly.
will be like hating us for life. He's got a thick, shaggy beard and shaggy head of hair as well. I don't think...
He won't after, you know, surviving an hour in a hot box.
I don't think Grizzly Adams over there can handle it.
Anywho, what are we going to be talking about this episode here, Matt?
A lot of post-season availability happening today. Did you guys see any of that, by the way?
No, I work.
Saw some tweets, but yeah.
You guys work?
Adam, yeah. Adam was inspiring the youth of tomorrow.
As always.
We'll get into some of the comments made, and I'll walk you guys through it in case you missed parts of it. I did watch some of it, and I did read a lot of the post-reaction as well, so that'll be some of it as well. We'll talk about the draft lottery, of course, again, it being the eve of the draft lottery. What else we got here, Chris?
Well, we got to talk a little bit about the what's that trophy again? That the Calder, is that what you call it?
The Calder.
Okay, you've been practicing. We're going to talk a little bit about...
I had to actually think about that for a second.
Some of the Jags, some of the content that we got.
Some of the non-Jags.
Yeah, you know, like, was it Beagle and Pearson? Yeah. They're available for the World Cup.
And we'll shoot from the hip as well, talk about the first round of the NHL playoff matchups. Of course, that'll be a continuing discussion as we get into the off-season version of the podcast here as well. Right?
Sounds good.
All right, let's do the F word.
He liked to say the F word.
Who wouldn't get the f*** here then? Okay, see ya.
He's going to have the F word on it.
I wish I could give you a explanation about it. I can't.
You out of hand.
You said the F word, Dad.
You called me the F word.
All right, so obviously end of season, time to have a little reflection on the season that was. And where or how we view the season. And easy to say it's a success. And Matt, you and I talked before recording here that you think it's a success because Sedins are gone. It was easy to peg this team to be a bottom of the barrel kind of team. And they maybe surprised some. They improved their point total from last year. They improved their goal scoring total as well, but that's almost like damning with faint praise to me because they were so bad last year. And yeah, they got better, but are they any closer to reaching a Stanley Cup final and competing for a Stanley Cup? In my mind, no, they're not really. You have the core nucleus, as you called them, Matt, the Pedersen, Hughes, Besser, and Horvat. And yeah, that's a good place to start for sure, but you need so much more than that. And we always talk about the Jags. We're going to get into them later. And that's what this team really is. It's just filled with that. And I don't want to jump too far ahead to the postseason presser from Benning when he talks about what teams need to win a Stanley Cup. But in my mind, he's still just so disillusioned and doesn't understand how aging works in the NHL. And all this kind of stuff that there's no progress being made. And until I see progress being made, you can say players are developing. Sure, that's all fine and dandy. But four or five players developing is not enough. There's just so many things drawing the team back before I can say that the season was a success. That's hard to say.
Let's go around the room maybe and do a take from everyone else here. Anna, success or failure this season?
Failure.
Thank you. See, they didn't make the playoffs.
Hang on.
Sorry.
You had your turn. Quiet down there. Big guy?
I'm going to say that it was a success.
I am also going to say it's a success. Split decision.
Yeah, I know Discord's going to come at me and say I'm too negative.
We can let the Discord people who are listening live be tiebreakers, if you will.
Well, if you think about, like I was going to comment, you know, if you think of development in teams as sort of everything being cyclical, they're still at the bottom. It's just that, you know, prior to the Sedins retiring, they were still in the downward trend. I think they've sort of hit the bottom, and we're now sort of seeing that there is this little flash of light. Now, it may be a heck of a long journey,
yeah.
But I think we now we can actually say here is a core four. We couldn't say that last year.
Nope. I'm going first.
Oh, okay.
You put your hand back down there, mister. Just to piggyback off of what Chris is saying, the big thing is that he mentioned the flash. Like, I didn't expect this team to suddenly compete for the playoffs, and a lot of this does have to do with the success that Elias Pettersson have, but I just wanted to be convinced at the end of this year that we are on the right path. Are we further down the path? Are we a lot further back on the path than we should be? Yes, but I think what we've seen from Elias Pettersson in his rookie year as a 20-year-old, the numbers that he has had, we are fully convinced that he is the real deal, that Brock Besser can be a first-line winger, that Bo Horvat probably has not hit his peak just yet, that Quinn Hughes can be in the NHL and adjust very quickly. I do think that looking at that nucleus of players that we have a foundation to work with, and maybe this is me drinking Francesco's lemonade, but I think that we have the right players that we will need to be competitive for a long time.
I think we have some of the right players, but you look at...
Sure. Not enough? Probably. But no. I think that comes with this offseason, a very crucial offseason.
Okay, but
as
the
well.
Question is, and I don't want to get too much into semantics here, but was this season a success? Yes, there are bright spots. Yes, there are players to build around, but was there any building around those players? Did the Canucks make the playoffs? No. And did we expect them to? No, but still. And was there any progress made in terms of building a competitive playoff caliber team? And I think we can all agree that no, that didn't happen.
Yeah, I think you asked a very black and white question there, Matt, but like any progress we have made this season really seems to be undoing damage from the already happened. So
this is true. I mean, we
did hit
Eric what I would call rock bottom after the Sedins retired.
And people are quick to say, you know, like Adam Gaudette is a big piece of this team going forward, and he may be, but you can't say that when he's the same age or same calendar year as Jared McCann, who put up 20 goals in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many misjudgments of talent going on in this team that happen every year that I can't see this as a successful season.
Yeah, and you look at players like Ben Hutton, if anything, he's regressed. Jake Virtanen had a bit of a boost, but in the latter part of the season, partly due to injury, you could say he's regressed. So, yeah, a lot of the development.
Edler and Tanev are, you know, on the downward trend.
Yeah, definitely. And we're still dependent on them. Yeah.
So I ask you this. What would you define as a successful season this year? Like, what would have made it successful?
I think for me and for a lot of fans is if there was a direction that made sense. Anna kind of talked about undoing certain mistakes, but even those, you know, they're not progress movers or progress stoppers, right? Like, you know, as much as I enjoy seeing Tanner Pearson, he's kind of reaching the peak of his career and he's going to go down, right? So I just, if there was a direction made to sell assets and rebuild properly and keep building towards something, then I'd be okay with that rather than just doing these status quo moves that don't work.
And it depends what you're defining as this season, but the July 1st earnings, you could just argue that only Antoine Roussel has panned out with any measure of success.
Yeah, Jay Beagle was a massive failure. He got two goals, and people... Oh, well, he wins face-offs.
Is that all he had?
I think he had two goals, maybe three
on
the season.
And that's Tim Schaller.
Tim Schaller.
Jesus.
And I get he's a one-year deal, so who really cares?
Yeah. He's on a two-year deal, Tim Schaller.
Is he?
Yes.
Oh, I thought it was a one-year deal.
He's back next year.
This whole season, I thought it was a one-year deal. Yikes. Okay, well, there you go.
So then based on that...
I got bad news for you, Cheech.
This season was over July 1st.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, we saw that.
I do think that you're still overlooking... I can't believe I'm being so positive, but I still think you're overlooking some of the serious strides that this team has made.
Yeah, I get that, and I appreciate that. Like, the you know, seeing Quinn Hughes was a revelation. The Canucks,
Jacob Markstrom stepping forward.
Okay,
as well.
Sure, but like those four, five, six players aren't going to win a team, and there's nothing being built around them. It's great. Every team needs those foundational players,
but
having two first line wingers. Two first line forwards, a second line center, mm-hmm. and one defenseman, and a good 30-year-old goalie. That's not a Stanley Cup winning team.
But it's what you said, a foundation, right? And don't you think it's a lot harder to build a foundation than it is to find complementary players to that foundation?
Okay, so we're 5 years here now, and mm-hmm. we have a foundation, sure, but how long until the right moves are made around them?
Also, what is our defensive foundation? Quinn Hughes? That's it. No?
Yeah, she's got a good point. I mean, Stetcher's a good...
Levy, maybe. I mean...
But we have no idea
I know.
And people well, are... I love Troy Stetcher, don't get me wrong, but realistically, he's a third or fourth defenseman. He's not going to be an all-star anytime.
So, but if what has been done in years past is being brought into the equation about this season was a failure if they won the Stanley Cup with a bunch of Jags. Like I, that's the problem. There's no equating to past mistakes. I don't disagree that what we're seeing is a big mess that suddenly Jim Benning has decided he's gonna try to deal with. The analogy I might use, it's like a cable that's been in your pocket and it's all knotted up, and you got to sort of peel it apart layer by layer. He's the guy who actually knotted it up, then threw it in the pocket, and now has been given the opportunity to pull it apart. Like I agree, yet we are seeing that. Like I think we can't be too quick to discount the progress. Yeah, right. If he goes on July 1st and signs a bunch of Jags again, okay, you know what? We're regressive. But that little flash of light at the end of the tunnel just went dark. I just feel that we can't completely discount that.
Yeah, and I don't think Adam or I are saying we should completely dismiss that there's any progress being made. But, for example, to show progress in the D, like a solid, like someone in Utica who was really developing and not necessarily coming up this year at all, but like someone that we could point to in Utica and just say, yeah, that would be progress.
And has
that happened?
That's fair, but then who would that have been? Like, who was that blue chip that Jim Benning screwed up in Utica? Is it Ilevi? Is it Cole Lind? I mean, you could argue that maybe it was an organizational thing with, you know, Trent Cull and all the rumors about how he's essentially, you know, Torts, you know, 1.2. But I still, like, those are mistakes of the past. The cupboard, as it pertains to the blue line, has never truly been addressed. Outside of, you know, Peterson and, you know, Horvat, you know, we're now starting to stretch with, you know, JV18, Gaudet. Hughes looked great, but we obviously got a very small sample size. I think we need to understand that it's not like Benning could work magic and find those blue chip, you know, blue line prospects.
But he's had 5 years to make those.
And if we look at 5 years, I don't disagree. It's been a failure. I look at 1 year. If I look at what we saw this season alone.
Because the question is, fairly or unfairly, what do you look at for this season? I understand the past 5 years of Benning's. I think everyone here would unanimously say it's a failure. However, this season in a vacuum, completely not looking at what was done in the past.
I still struggle to call it a successful season. Yes, it was nice seeing those things, and there's some pleasant surprises. But that, to me, does not make a successful season.
Let's move on towards the other things Jim Benning said at the postseason presser earlier today, saying that he is going to try and be aggressive over free agency. He's looking to address maybe a top six scoring role, adding another defenseman as well. Are these the kind of aggressive moves he's going to have to make, not only to save his job, but to make some of that impact that you're talking about, Adam, that they need to make next season?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you can't say that without saying his other quote, which was that the big quote that everyone's going to take away was that Stanley Cup champions Stanley Cups are won with 26 to 35 year olds.
That was
right?
Bizarre to me too.
It's wrong. I mean, you look at the Penguins, you look at the Blackhawks, you know, they're young star players.
What would you say is the accurate age range?
21 to 35.
22 to 30,
yeah, I mean,
almost.
It's nice having those veterans. If you said Stanley Cups are won with 26 to 35 year olds playing, you know, a supporting role, that's one thing. But, you know, like the idea of him making these aggressive moves scares me because he might acquire another 25 year old when their peak isn't at 27, mm-hmm. right? Like there's not a lot of room for growth when you go that way.
So when I heard that comment, I will agree, it's kind of bizarre, kind of odd. But if we look at it in terms of depth, which you brought up, there is truth to that. If that's where you need those players who may not be your superstars, but they're the ones that give you such a consistent effort and sort of help you push over the edge, that's where you'll find them. Like, you know, Manny Malhotra in 2011, I mean, his loss, you know, midway through to the season, you know, was huge. And even though he did come back, I mean, Manny was not the same Manny that we had seen previous to his injury. You know, you look at, you know, Dan Hemme's maybe to some respect not be the best, you know, example because he was maybe more blue chip than depth. But that's where I think Benning might have been trying to go. It's just he's horrible.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I think, you know, and that makes total sense. The supporting role players can be that. But even his team in Boston when they won, Marchand and Bergeron were all younger than that themselves.
Yeah, so. mid-20s around that range at the time. I think the most curious thing is that he says this when he had just finished talking about his 21-year-olds and 20-year-olds and 22-year-olds and Horvat, Besser, and Pettersson. Like, was he signaling that we're not going to win a Stanley Cup for another 4 or 5 years then, if that's the case?
I mean, yeah, I was going to say this earlier, but to bring it up now, the things that might save Benning's job next year might be not necessarily the things that we think is best for the development of the team. and their eventual goal to win a Stanley Cup. Because what's going to save his job next year is making the playoffs.
Ultimately, anyway. Let's go back to what we talked about, his desire to add someone up front in the top six and on the defense as well. We talked about aggressive moves. We talked about this a little bit yesterday, but Artemi Panarin, does he make the call, yes or no? To try and at least pitch him.
I think it would be foolish not to at least have a call and open discussions if you want to make an aggressive move, because outside of free agency, there's not a lot the Canucks have to work with to make an aggressive move. Mm-hmm. So,
well, it's funny you say that, because during the radio broadcast when he was on 650 during the intermission, he actually said, oh, I got to get a top six winger and a top six blue liner, and we're going to look at, you know, free agency, but probably trades. And the word trade seems odd to me, because what is it that the Canucks have to offer up in a deal to get a top six forward or top six blue liner that no other team is...
We'll get to trades in a second. Let's just start with free agency first. Can we start with free agency
okay,
first?
Okay, fine.
Moving on from Artemi Panarin. Jeff Skinner, are these the kind of players that you're hoping he at least makes a call out to?
Yeah, well, I mean, who knows? I would love to see Panarin in a Canucks uniform, just because I think he's such a skilled player. But, you know, where do you draw the line? You know, I like Skinner. He doesn't have the same kind of offensive upside, I think, as Panarin does, even though he's a great player.
He scored 40 goals.
Did he really get 40?
I think Skinner had 40 goals this year.
Really? Okay, well, then I take it back. I didn't know that. So, I don't know. Do you want that? I think yes, but you got to weigh the cost. And then where do you draw the line between those elite guys and guys like Michael Ferland or...
See, those are the guys that I'm not interested in, though.
Of course not, but those are such Benning guys.
Yeah, I was going to say, Ferland, I could totally see in a Canucks
uniform.
But would
you say that Ferland is a top six guy? Even in GMJB's like wild mind, does he consider those guys top six guys?
He got 20-something goals, didn't
he? Wayne Simmons there, too?
Oh, I don't want... I love Wayne Simmons.
But again, he reeks of a Jim Benning type of player.
But he's like 30-something now.
Yeah. Wayne Simmons, maybe 3 years ago.
Yeah. 5 years ago.
Yeah. Maybe.
Gustav Nyquist?
Again, like, no thank you. Not even close. If it's not Skinner or Panarin, I don't want any...
Yeah. I think that's kind of the vibe I feel, too.
Player.
Yeah.
You know, depth guys, maybe, but at a decent cost. Let's not get crazy here, Jim. But those are the only... I think those two guys and Jake Gardner are the only...
Ed Carlson.
Are the only big name...
Yeah,
players
Jake Gardner,
I would
definitely
want.
Be interested in.
So it's any of those guys or make no moves at all? Is that what you would rather
well,
see?
Well, no big moves, because, you know, a guy like Ferland could demand a lot of money.
Yeah,
could
I know,
get it
but,
from a guy
but,
like
but I would not be interested in bringing in Ferland.
No, neither would I, but I'm saying those are the, you know, for me, it's those guys or some very smaller guys, small name guys, or nothing.
Yeah,
you know?
I think so, too.
Like, yeah, like, I'm not against
no more Roussel, Beagle-esque type of players.
Yeah.
Yeah, bringing in guys that are cheap, but...
Do you have faith, though, that that's not what he's going to go for?
No, not at all. Like, as we're saying, Ferland is a Benning guy, like, through and through.
Quoting an old C4-ism, I have no confidence in that.
Oh, I miss confidence vote. We should bring that back.
We should bring that back. If we had a legitimate studio, we would bring that back.
Oh, true.
Big Dog, getting back to your discussion, trade avenues, possibly for the Vancouver Canucks.
Well, the difficulty that I have with trades to go and get top six is top six is going to command a lot of money. Really, the only opportunity that, you know, Benning has available to him is somehow taking on horrible contract for a cap-strapped team. Because, again, the Canucks have this space that they haven't had in years. But even with that said, I don't know if the Vancouver Canucks really want to be taking, you know, bad contracts that route. In my mind, the bad contracts are what's getting you the prospects, the picks. Like, that's the rebuilding phase. So if the team truly wants to be competitive but at the same time not mortgage its future, I mean, what do they have available that could get value? You could argue you know, JV18, a Hutton, who...
Yeah, Vertan is an interesting name because I just don't think he's brought up that much in you know, casual trade conversations. I don't know what kind
of value
he's
getting talked about
have.
A lot in Discord, though, as a trade piece, for sure.
Yeah, I think it's him and Hutton are the two most valuable trade pieces. But those guys, I mean, what do they fetch? Equivalent kind of players, right? So,
well, but not only that, like, you, the two of them together might get you top six,
Right.
Like, and that's a stretch right there.
But that's some team dumping salary again, right?
Right. Yeah. And the problem is that, again, the Canucks don't have a lot to go and sell with. Now, that said, we're also ignoring the fact they've got picks.
Which Benning has also said he doesn't want to trade because of the draft.
Right. So it's like, yeah, I'm going to go make some deals, and we're just going to make the magic happen. We'll get into the whole conversation, I'm sure, about fences a little bit later. But the analogy that I had used as to, would Canucks fans want to...
Was that you operating the Canucks hockey account?
No, that was actually the Blogfather. Oh, okay. That was JJ.
I just saw that now.
I missed this. Can you...
Okay, so I'll read the very quick tweet from Corey Hirsch, but hang on. I'm scrolling through. There were a lot of responses here. Nope, not there yet. Nope, not there yet. Cool. Canucks Twitter is the neighbor that comes over with a case of beer, sits in a lawn chair and watches you put up your fence, tells you you're doing it all wrong, but never helps.
Well, we're not supposed to help.
Yeah, what are we supposed to do?
What are we supposed to do?
Well, the implication is that you're sitting there complaining about it, telling your neighbor that they're doing it wrong, that you could do it better.
Without being specific.
Mm. And so, I mean, that started off a whole, meme machine as to what people were talking about. But, I'd sort of inferred that when it came to Canucks fans, they're going to be bringing you the cheap beer and they'll look to trade it with the neighbor for the good stuff. And to help get the good stuff, we'll throw in our empties because that just makes it that much more palatable. When in reality, we can't afford the good stuff. We don't have anything to trade for the good stuff.
I saw your response.
It just makes me sad when you think of the whatever few trade pieces we've had that we've not just more thoroughly explored the option sooner when they might be going and helping out a team, who are looking to build and win a Stanley Cup now. Like, and then we could have gone picks or something to just so that our journey wasn't stalled. I don't know. It's just frustrating.
A little off the rails here, but do you guys remember that dude who started with a paperclip and ended with a house? So Jim Benning should be starting off with a paperclip and
started with a house and he ended up with a paperclip?
Well, in fairness, not really. He was sort of midway through. But he should be the guy that has that paperclip and just little by little getting more. But Jim Benning's the guy who's got this paperclip and he's like, you know what? I'm pretty sure I can get a car for this. And he's trading it in for a wreck that's on the ICBC lot that they just want to get rid of because it's taking up space. That's what he's trading his paperclip for.
We got a little bit off the rails, as you mentioned. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with Rewind right after this.
So, we're a little bit late in giving a shout-out, and for that I apologize. Look, we're in a hot box.
It's Adam's fault.
It's a little warm, and yeah, it is.
He was champing at the bit.
Always Adam's fault. But we have a new member in the Patron Club. That's the Inner Squad. Like, do we have a name for our patrons? Like, should we have a name for our patrons?
Like C4.
I don't know. It should be like a club name. Maybe.
I don't know.
The C4some.
Well, that's different. I think we should let our patrons determine what they're part of. But we have we've talked about Epictetus, who has been part of previous live episodes. Well, he has joined the patron crew with a listening in tier pledge. So, we do owe a shout out. Now, I also want to comment on Epictetus' handle on Patreon, which is Cry Me a Rivers. I'm trying to figure out if that's an NFL reference or
Justin Timberlake reference.
Well, yeah, but Rivers, maybe like Phil Rivers,
I don't get it.
I don't get it either.
Yeah, well, anyhow, I just...
Explain it to
maybe
us,
he will explain it to us.
We'll have to. And then beyond that as well, I still need to get around to upgrading, the bearded one's role in Discord for winning the hockey pool thingamabobber. What's it, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And we get to change your Discord name, too.
Okay, first and foremost, no, I did you a solid. We've already talked about this many times. Anyhow, rewind. So, media availability happened today.
So let's get to the players portion of the media availability. And we'll be very quick because we do have to expedite this segment a little bit. But Elias Pettersson talked about his rookie season, the ups and downs, how teams were obviously focusing their attention on him halfway through. Said that he wants to work on his shot over the offseason. Did he not see his shot? Why don't my shots look like that?
For improvement. Like, just because you're the best on the team doesn't mean you're perfect. Good for him.
I want him and Brock Besser to train together as pals over the offseason.
I know.
And then they just take turns working their shot.
They do seem like best friends, don't they?
Yeah.
It's really nice to see.
Which one of us is Besser and which one of us is Pettersson?
We've been over this. You're stockier than I am, so you're Besser.
Right, right.
I think
I'm like the exact same build and weight as Pettersson, so...
They're this just friends in the same way that you two are just friends.
Are you shipping us?
I've always shipped you guys. You know that.
If we're Besser and Pettersson, what's Anna? Oh. Levo.
I was going to say Gudbranson.
Yeah.
Oh, dang.
Dragging us down.
I'm happy with that, though. I'm the looker of the podcast.
Anyway, let's get back on the rails. Pettersson working on a shot. Like, would you say his season was a success? Like,
yeah,
massive
absolutely.
Success.
Yes, resounding.
Absolutely. He had 68 points, I think, in 71 games? Correct me if I'm wrong.
Something
but,
of the sort.
You know, almost a point per game in your first year when everyone said he was too small. He would take a lot of time to adjust.
Yep.
You know, you take that and run. And, yeah, he slowed down at the end of the year, but now he knows what to expect going into year two. So
let's move over to Brock Besser, and I'll go to you, Chris, on this one. Contract negotiations with his agent supposed to pick up sometime in the not-too-distant future. He's also not going to play for Team USA at the World Championships because he wants a full offseason to train, which does make sense. But getting back to the contract aspect of it, though, what are you thinking as someone who likes to look at the numbers, so to speak, with Brock Besser?
He's looking for a bridge, and if I'm the Canucks, I'm doing everything in my ability not to give it to him.
Yeah.
I mean, did he have an actual slump in a sophomore season?
But here's the thing, though.
Not really, not especially when they paired him with Pettersson.
Let me ask you this question, though. He was on a very good run to end the season, production-wise. Probably one of the most consistent forwards in the lineup the last month or 2 months of the season. Does that at all change the dialogue that happens between the two sides? We'll go to Chris.
Sorry.
I, to be honest, I don't think it does. I actually think it reinforces why Besser looks at the bridge option. It might make the Canucks more willing to provide, within a longer term, more money. But again, Besser, and if he's in it for the business, it's bridge, bridge, bridge.
Do you see any, Adam, avenue where this could get ugly, negotiations?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, I could see him getting something to what Nylander got, which I think was 6x6.9.
Yeah.
Or a 7x7 kind of thing, or again, a bridge deal. And maybe he gets a bridge deal, but I don't think that hurts either party.
Yeah, no, I think the Canucks will push term.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, if they go and sign a bridge, they will. It's just they're going to try
And I love Besser, but I don't see him getting a $10 or $11 million deal. Mm-hmm. I don't think, unless he starts putting up 40 the next 2 years, right? So,
and any thoughts on Besser or Pettersson? I'll ask you the next question.
I think we'll just end up giving him what he wants and signing a bridge.
Okay. This question going to you, Anna. Bo Horvat talking about how he feels he hasn't even hit his best hockey of his career yet. This despite the fact in game 82, we were talking about how he was challenging Ryan O'Reilly for the most faceoffs won in the season. And Horvat developing quite nicely, hitting 60 points again this season. Like, does Horvat have more to give than what he's already shown this year? Or is this basically what we will see on a year-to-year basis?
Well, you have to think he's had his toughest season yet. He's, you know, Henrik's gone. There's absolutely no sheltering there. And his line has constantly been
a mishmash as well.
Well, the mishmash, so difficult to develop any chemistry, which he has said in interviews that he finds a struggle, like that he's enjoyed playing with Tanner Pearson just merely from a consistency standpoint. But yeah, his line has faced the toughest matchups, and his time on ice is, yeah, that's a labor. So I think there's definitely room for growth as he adjusts to this huge sort of uptake in responsibility.
Mike Gillis was on TSN 1040 last week and even said that Horvat could possibly be better than Ryan Kessler was at his prime. Is that a stretch at all? I'll let anyone here take that one.
I think they're different players. Like, I truly see Horvat as a maybe more consistent, more well-balanced.
I would say Horvat's a little more methodical as well in his game than Kessler, which was built on, like, just pure physical play.
Yeah, and I think you look at Kessler, he'd spike or peak probably higher than we'd ever get from Besser, but I don't believe we would see the significant regression.
I think also Kessler in his prime was part of, you know, one of the best teams of the past 10, 15, 20 years.
Which inflated
right?
his production
exactly,
as well.
And part of the best power play in the league that year. So will Horvat ever score 41 goals in 75 points? I'm not sure. But I don't think that makes him any less productive or any less of a player.
So
I think he's more impressive because he's doing it in this team instead of the 2011 team. Yeah.
So if Horvat in his prime was on the 2011 team, would he put up the same numbers as Kessler did, so to speak? Like, let's put Horvat in Kessler's position in 2011 at that same age. Like, does Horvat break 40 in that kind of situation?
It's very possible.
Yeah, fair enough.
Just, again, a little off the rails here. You guys hear Gillis on the radio talking about Kessler last week?
Yeah.
Like, essentially implying that the reason Kessler was so successful was
that the team... Yeah, because they put him in that position and they got Cody Hodgson line mates for him, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, so...
I encourage you to go back and listen to it, by the way, if you haven't. I'll fill you in later.
But, I mean, look at Horvat. I don't think Horvat needs to be Cody Hodgson to be as successful.
Yeah. More on the Canucks and their postseason availability earlier today. How about we go to Tanner Pearson, who was ending the year with Bo Horvat on his line. He was probably, in a way, the most consistent line mate that Bo Horvat had all season. Does Tanner Pearson get every opportunity to cement his spot in the top six with Bo Horvat in that second line kind of role?
Yeah, he comes to camp and competes, sure.
But he's not being given it, is what you're saying.
Well,
here's the thing. 20 games he played with the Canucks, and I think he had 13 goals. Or maybe it was 13 points. I can't remember.
His production took a massive leap from it was completely stagnated in LA.
And I think the fact that he got to play consistently obviously helped with that. But, Anna, you kind of touched on it. Horvat loved playing with Pearson and loved having him on his wing, and said it in a rather pointed manner, I think, that he was finally happy to not have, you know, helicopter line mates, right? So, you know, when your potential captain is saying that, you listen to that, you would hope, and you give him a chance. And maybe, you know, maybe you look to bring in another player to play with them, but I think that's, you pencil that in to start the season and go from there.
There isn't another player that isn't Louis freaking Eriksson. Yeah. Like, that's a tough line to play with, I think. Tanner Pearson seems to be the new Brisebois in that he got mentioned, probably name checked about 20 plus times today.
Sorry, Chris. Quick thoughts.
I was just going to say, like Pearson, like contract wise, he needs to, well, his contract dictates he's a top six player. And I think you're right. Yeah, you pencil him in. But at camp, I think he needs to still perform. Like, I agree Horvat needs consistent line mates, and he needs more than anchors.
But what we saw from Pearson in 20 games, you want to see over a much longer period of time as well.
Yeah. I mean, we had a very small sample size in the dog days of hockey when, you know, the Jags were throwing the team on their shoulders and making magic happen.
Let's move very fast now through the rest of the forward units. Sven Berchi, it sounded like the coaching staff and management weren't really concerned about concussion issues with Berchi. Are we concerned, though?
I think, you're always concerned when a guy has chronic concussion issues. Mm-hmm. You hope for the best, and if he's not showing any symptoms, then great. But, yeah, it's always going to be a concern.
But where does Sven Berchi play if you have Tanner Pearson, who now shows the same kind of chemistry with Horvat that Berchi did?
Put them all on a line.
Only one of them plays left wing, though.
Nah, the other guy could play right wing. I don't know if that's true, but you know, who knows?
Right. But if you had to pick between the two to play on Horvat's line, though.
Berchi would be my choice, probably, just because he's a better player. Maybe he's a tradable asset. Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe they do trade Berchi. That's a name that doesn't get mentioned a lot. Could you see there being a market for Sven Berchi?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, a contending team who needs another top six player, middle six player.
Berchi Hutton in the second? Is that the new Raymond Ballard in the second?
For who?
Louis Erickson talked about his contract, says he intends to fulfill the last 3 years of it.
$13 million. Would you give that up?
No.
Will he be getting it from Vancouver, though?
Well...
okay, we could spend forever on this, so I would preface this by saying let's be quick.
So, I see a situation where Vancouver pays his signing bonus this season, and because that signing bonus nearly cuts that $13 million, you know, down by half. So, if I'm a team looking to pick him up, I'm waiting until the signing bonus gets taken care of.
Okay, so a very quick around the room. Does Louis Erickson play all 82 games, assuming he was fully healthy next year?
No, he'll be scratched. If it happened this year, he'll see himself in the press box.
I agree.
Does Louis Erickson end up in Utica at any point next season?
No.
Negative.
Does Louis Erickson end up on an NHL team that's not the Vancouver Canucks next season?
No.
So no, in other
like
words,
it to happen.
So in other words, he's going to play the entire season, but he'll get scratched here and there.
Yeah, and he still for at least next year has all the power. He's got an NTC. Mm-hmm. He's the guy who has to agree to going to wherever it is he goes.
Okay, moving on. Nikolai Goldobin, talking about his season, admits it was a pretty bad one, saying that he's going to do whatever it takes to get back into earning a spot again. Is the Nikolai Goldobin era over? Yes or no? Start with Adam.
No.
No.
Yes.
I also say yes, but I really wish it was no.
I'm saying no, but I kind of want the answer to be yes. Because I don't want another season of Goldobin not playing, not getting chances, and just like, how does a player develop?
I think an important thing that not a lot of people are talking about, this is a tweet. Goldobin in his last 25 games played, 3 goals, 3 assists. Levo in his 25 games, last 25 games played, 3 goals, 3 assists. People are quick to champion Levo and quick
this
to poo-poo Goldobin.
Fair enough.
So I get that there's been so much more with Goldobin, ups and downs and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I think Levo needs to be not on the hot seat, but the same conversation we're having with Pearson.
Yeah,
he's got to earn it as much as anybody else. So.
Well, I mean, I look at Goldobin. Last, 3-4 games of the season when you should probably have him in your lineup.
Yeah, he just didn't play.
That blew my mind.
I know it blew everybody's mind, but when a guy doesn't play the last, 10-12 games of the season, it's a pretty tall telltale sign in my mind. And that's why I feel like the Goldobin era is over.
Well, fair enough, but 10-12 games, the Canucks were still in the playoff hunt. You know, once they were eliminated, was it last Friday?
You'd think
but
once they were eliminated. Maybe that's a good point.
But if you're the way the Canucks were talking, okay. It's like, you're telling us we got a chance.
Right.
Mathematically, they're out. They're done. This is the time when you go and you have whatever fun you need, except if you're Goldobin who gets to eat the popcorn.
I don't understand that.
Even just looking at the lines from yesterday and just thinking, the fact that Louis was playing on Bo's line, why? Just put on Josh Levo, put on Goldobin, just don't put...
Well, he only got, 9 minutes or something like that?
Yeah,
that's
fair, but...
But, I mean, could Goldobin have had 9 minutes of hockey in St. Louis?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Arguably, he probably should have.
Yeah. We got to move on past Nikolai Goldobin. We'll get to the rest of the forward lineups. Yes or no, are they back next season? Marcus Granlund.
Yes.
Ugh.
Yeah, I know.
I think so, too.
Yeah, but it makes me feel gross to say it.
He's a Benning and Green guy, so.
Big dog? Roof.
I don't know. And I knew that was
weird.
Stop doing that.
He's the big dog.
The reason I can't make a decision on Granlund is there are so many.
Yes or no, Golden.
I'll tell you on September 1st.
Oh, God. Tyler Mott. Is the Tyler Mott era over?
No, he's back.
Ugh, he's so terrible. What does he bring, really?
He's just another guy who's
soured on
with
him.
No finish.
I soured him on, in the early part of 2018, I would have said, yeah, he's a good bottom six guy, but we have enough bottom six guys now at this point.
Yeah, I mean, he's the jaggiest of jags.
Can you have too many bottom six players, though?
No, you can't, but... apparently. Alex Edler says he intends to finish the rest of his career in Vancouver if he can. Is it a foregone conclusion that he's not going to pull a Dan Hamhuis and take his ball and go somewhere else?
Well, I don't know why you're dropping the Dan Hamhuis comparison.
Okay,
here,
well, Dan Hamhuis probably wanted to come back but didn't get offered a contract. So let me separate myself from that comment.
Edler's back is the answer to your question.
And
yes, with all the double negatives, I got a little lost. But yes, Edler is back.
I love double negatives.
So,
NTC?
Well, see, I think that's what Edler's waiting on. I actually think Edler wants those letters again.
That's the holdup?
I think that's the holdup.
Fair enough. Not much more on the defense, I think, to go on. So let's go move forward. Okay, well, actually, let's go to this. Ben Hutton, is he the biggest trade piece that the Canucks are going to lobby around this year, this offseason?
Hey, they're going to go hard on the Hutton trade train.
Who wants a Hutton? Jacob Markstrom, extension? Too early to talk?
Yeah, Markstrom played really well, obviously. But Demko ended the year with pretty good numbers.
Mm-hmm.
When we were all quick to write him off early. I don't, like, it's not as easy as, yeah, Markstrom played well, let's sign him long term. You know, if you have a guy who's younger and putting up similar production, give him a chance too.
Right, but I just think Demko hasn't been played enough to tell. And I don't
think...
Okay,
then let him play.
No, I agree. I just think what Markstrom showed didn't ultimately, like, completely change my mind on what kind of goaltender he is. It just meant that I think he can last a little longer as a number one or one-ish to protect Demko as he gets there. But yeah, Demko, I mean, like, as you were talking about, like, Goldobin not playing, why the heck didn't Demko get all the starts?
Because like, they were in the playoff hunt.
Let me ask you guys this question, and this hasn't really been talked about, but in terms of trade pieces, is there any chance that Jim Benning tries to offer Thatcher Demko in a trade?
It just seems like such a thing that he's going to do.
Outside of Ben Hutton, they really don't have anyone of real value. Thatcher Demko might have real value.
I'd rather trade DiPietro. DiPietro has real value.
I can tell if you're being serious or not. Are you?
No, I'm being serious.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, totally.
So
there's a bit of a goalie logjam. Let's not beat around the bush here.
So if they trade Demko, they're committing to Markstrom.
Yes.
And DiPietro is instantly the goalie of the future.
Yes.
Right? DiPietro, who is unproven in the NHL, and Markstrom, who has yet to consistently prove that he's a number one.
Have we not seen enough out of Markstrom to be convinced that he can be a number one, though?
Matt, you
For
and
how
I,
much
sorry,
longer? Like,
yeah, Matt, you and I always talk about this in fantasy football, for instance.
Mm.
When a player kind of out of nowhere produces and has a huge season, that's an outlier. Like, this has not been Jacob Markstrom. In my eyes, you just don't become...
But isn't Jacob Markstrom still young enough to consider
he's,
that
what,
he's 28, just
29? Like, I, you
but
just
these
don't
are
become
prime,
a franchise...
These are prime years, though, now for Jacob
you
Markstrom.
You just don't become a franchise goalie.
I'm not saying he's a franchise goalie, Adam.
Okay, but Demko has that potential right now.
Yeah, I think training Demko would be crazy.
And if
but
Canucks,
if Thatcher Demko gets you a legitimate top six piece that you didn't get in free agency, are you not saying that you wouldn't make that deal?
Okay, well a top six piece or a starting goalie for the next 10 years.
Yeah, like you can't win a Stanley Cup without goaltending. And I don't think DiPietro or Markstrom can win them a Stanley Cup.
Rewind back to September. What did we define Markstrom and Nielsen as?
1A and 1B.
Well, we had actually lowered it.
1B and 1C?
2A and 2B. And Markstrom had an outstanding season. The first one he has had as a Canuck. He is not the franchise goaltender yet.
Yeah, and also his outstanding season was slightly above league average. Like, I appreciate his season, but he was like, he wasn't even close to Vezina contention, right? Like,
that's the Canucks MVP you're talking about.
He earned it, but you know, he's just not. If the Canucks aren't going to be competing for a cup until these guys are 26, like Benning says, or whatever, then, you know, signing a goalie till he's 32 just doesn't make sense, you know?
Chris, I mean, tell me about this. You have stressed the words asset management. Here you have Thatcher Demko, a former second round pick, built up to this point to now become an NHL backup goaltender at the worst. Is there not at least a sell high opportunity on Thatcher Demko?
Well,
is it a sell? I don't know if I would call it a sell high.
Okay,
but.
So let's actually use a comparable Canucks duo, Luongo and Schneider.
They traded Schneider.
Correct. They traded Schneider when everyone thought, oh my God, Luongo wanted out.
Yeah.
Right? Now, are we saying that Markstrom is equivalent to Luongo? Because I think it's fair to say Demko is equivalent to Schneider.
But also, you got to think about the contract. The context of it all is totally different.
Oh, yeah, no, a total different context. But we knew that if Schneider got traded, when he did, people weren't concerned that Luongo couldn't carry the team. People were concerned
that
Luongo was invested in the team. Now, is Markstrom invested in the team? I think he is. All intents and purposes, especially with what he was saying at his presser, yeah, he's totally sold in Vancouver in the future. Is he able to carry this team? I'm sorry. Until I see another season of him playing lights-out hockey or average lights-out hockey.
Yeah, and that's why I think, you know, you play the season out and then visit extension at the end of the year, but I think you give Demko more opportunity to play.
Yeah. And if I was going to trade a goaltender, I said it last episode, I would talk about possibly dishing Markstrom.
I agree. If you want to talk about a sell high candidate.
Yeah. And you can talk about like goalie logjam. Like there's kind of a vacuum underneath Demko. And you can only have two goaltenders in an NHL team. It's not the same as having like tons of Jags on your D or tons of Jags on your wing.
I just think, and I'll be very quick if we're wrapping this up, position of strength, goaltending is at least a decent strength, and if you can find a way to trade one of your strengths for help up front, you might have to do it. Whether it's, I almost said Luongo, whether it's Markstrom or Demko, remains to be seen. Take a break, come back very quickly with the draft lottery pre-segment coming up here.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Is that because he was mad?
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty of heat and play. He's going to get a lot of power play time and...
Yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
So, the NHL Draft Lottery is upon us. By this time tomorrow, Adam, we're going to know where the Vancouver Canucks pick.
I mean, we do know where they pick.
12th?
Yeah.
You know how horrible that will be?
Okay, so a little sneak peek behind the curtains. Most people know I work at BC Lottery Corporation. Part of my responsibilities is helping to manage PlayNow.com, which is the BC's only legal online sports betting website, by the way. I'm a company man. We started doing NHL draft lottery bets for this year. One of the bets was, where will the Vancouver Canucks pick in June? The options were, of course, 1, 2, and 3, or 9, 10, 11, 12. The odds to pick 12 were 200 to 1. And I'll just tell you, talking to the Play Now guys, they said, we better hope that the Canucks don't pick 12th overall. Because there was a lot of good action happening there.
So I should be logging in right now.
You don't have an account. I checked.
You know, there's so much wrong with that if you had. 200 to 1 for 12, huh?
Like I think the mathematical odds, they're not great to pick 200 to 1.
I mean, I'd put a flyer like it. I'd put a 20 down on that.
You put a 20 down on that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's to me, if I'm going to go and gamble, I'm going to put $20. I mean, it's very easy. I could go and throw that 20 into a slot machine.
The odds are 0.1%, by the way.
Yeah, it's not good.
But still, I mean, hey.
It's literally
1,000 to 1.
Like, it is a 1 in 1,000 shot.
Hey, it's no different than putting some money down.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
On a safety being the first score in the Super Bowl. And
this is true.
Cleaning up with, like, hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions. There was that one guy who like dropped a mill on that bean. I wish I had that guy's money. Anyhow,
it would be kind of baseless to talk about who will win the NHL draft lottery. We all know what the odds are and stuff like that. But let's look at the top of the list and go down from there. Like, talk about which team actually deserves to win one of the top three lottery spots. Does Colorado? They're in the playoffs.
No.
I don't feel they do.
No.
If Colorado... So let me present you this scenario. What if Colorado got both Jack Hughes and won the Stanley Cup in the exact same year? I mean, it's not going to happen.
That'd be the greatest season in NHL history.
Like, whoever's the... Is it Sakic?
Like, GM? I don't think that's ever happened where a team wins a cup and gets first overall pick. That would be
unbelievable. It's not been impossible, but it's been impossible.
There is a path for it to happen, though,
right.
Which would be crazy.
Yeah, it's bananas.
But I don't know. Colorado does not deserve...
What are the BCLC odds on that?
Of Colorado winning the cup and winning...
And winning the lottery.
No, it's not great.
You parlay that, drop a fiver.
Could you... Does LA deserve anybody?
No, if you win, what, three cups in 5 years or whatever it
you
is?
You should not...
Get out of town. They deserve all the bad contracts.
But they never had first overall, Adam.
I don't care. They've won cup. If you won a cup in the past 10 years, you don't deserve first overall.
I feel like that should be a rule, too.
Yeah.
That if you've won the Stanley Cup, you, like, lose one chance or something like that.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
And if you've won the lottery as well, you also lose a chance. Like, there needs to be... If the NHL
right.
actually wanted to consider full parity, they would
right,
have
so Oilers
like
don't
that.
Win three times in a row.
That's BS.
Yeah.
New Jersey. They won, had Nico Hischier. I feel like they don't deserve him.
Yeah, that's fine.
They're going to get a top five pick anyway, so it's like it's not like they're getting handicapped here. Detroit, I actually wouldn't be mad if Detroit won.
I would not
one
be
the
mad
top three
at
picks.
All if Jack Hughes went to
it's Detroit. A pretty cool story if you think about it that way.
Yeah, and you know, I feel like the NHL is in a better place when the Red Wings are good.
So I'm curious, why is it that the Red Wings are okay, but the Kings are not?
Because the Red Wings haven't won a Stanley Cup for like
a decade.
Yeah,
and how many did they win prior to that?
I was young.
Like I know time has passed, but
Detroit has also been pretty bad for a while now too.
Also, Eastern Conference, Western Conference, you know,
keep that
okay. Okay,
back. Keep
okay,
those elite
can,
talents out.
Get them out. Of,
can,
get them
can,
out east.
I can live with that. That's fine. The conference part. I
get what you're saying. It's totally picking and choosing.
Yeah, like I had to live through the era of the Avalanche
sure.
and the Red Wings, and I mean the Devils. Like,
yeah, the Wings just haven't been on my radar
wait,
in so
this,
long that, I,
the same
that
reason,
I can't get upset.
Yeah,
about.
And it's the same reason why we're not talking about if the Avs win top. It's because they already have an embarrassment of riches right now that we're mad about. Moving further down the list, Buffalo, I feel like they should not be in on this.
But if they do, I'm you know, him and Hughes, or him and Eichel, sorry, would be fun. That's
no, they have enough guys, though, up front.
I'm okay with it. I'm okay
with
it.
Is Buffalo the Edmonton of the East?
Buffalo is quickly getting there, dude. They were on a massive loss run towards the end of the year.
They know how to tank.
They were tanking harder than people could tank in realisticness.
And I think actually, just to off the rails, there's a reason why you're not hearing Anna's voice right now.
Oh, yeah.
She's gone.
Yeah, she had to peace out. Oh, yeah, she had prior gone. Engagement, so it's just the three guys you're recording. Yeah, we probably should have mentioned off the top.
Probably. Yeah. But we're not organized here, Christopher. The New York Rangers, Jack Hughes in a Rangers jersey?
No, I listen, any team that beats the Canucks in the Stanley Cup final, even if I was 2.5 years old, they don't...
Get him out of there.
Yeah. But I wouldn't be too upset. New York, Hughes would be fine.
Edmonton
Eastern
will,
Conference is okay.
Edmonton will just skip that one right there.
Oh my! If that happens, I swear to God, I would riot.
Well, look at Edmonton. They've got Connor McDavid, who 2 years in a row has put up just... insane numbers, and the team is still
not to mention
Draisaitl,
who had 49 this year, like
yeah,
200 point scores. And
did you see that stat posted in our Discord app that the Oilers were, I think, one of the first teams maybe in history to have two 100 point scorers and miss the playoffs?
That's hard to do. Imagine how crazy Canuck fans would be going if
you have
one
to be
player got
on a new
points.
Level of suck to have two 100-point players and not make the playoffs.
Well, but yeah. Look, you look at the Canucks. If they had two 100-point players, they've won enough games. They're in the playoffs. Like that's
the last time the Canucks had two 100-point... Did they have two 100-point players?
Sedin's twice.
Were they? No, at the
that
same
means,
season,
I mean,
though.
Yeah, that means Horvat is getting 40 more points and Pedersen's getting 32 more points. That's, you know, 16 goals at least. That's a lot of... That's a win or two,
yeah,
at least,
and
right?
And how many games where the Canucks did they
shoot out losses or whatever?
Yeah,
right?
Lose points I mean, that the Canucks are in the playoffs with that. Yeah.
Call me crazy, but as we get through the rest of the list here, that's not the Canucks. Anaheim, Philadelphia, Minnesota, Chicago, Florida, Arizona, Montreal. The only team that I would be unhappy to see getting the top pick would be Chicago.
Same. I agree. I think
everyone else I can live with.
Anaheim's going to be bad for a while, I think, just because of those anchor contracts they have. That
Kessler, LTIR? It sounds like his career's over.
Yeah, it really does feel like that.
Well, the way he was talking when he was here in Vancouver, and I think it was clear that he was believing it was a swan song.
Yeah. I don't think he got the...
Okay, so super off the rails. Kessler, Ring of Honor?
No.
I don't think you can just because of the way it all ended.
No.
Pavel Bure left on some pretty uncordial terms, too.
Pavel Bure got screwed by the team. If that Ring of Honor were to have existed back in the late 90s, early 2000s, there's no way they could throw a Bure up there because Canucks fandom would just revolt. Then word comes out that the Canucks were taking the screws to Bure. And
sure.
He's also one of the best players in NHL history.
But,
Hall of Famer.
But are you saying that there's not a path where eventually, like, 10 years from now?
No.
Ryan Kessler would have to come back to Vancouver, mea culpa twice every single day, donate generously to
get
all of the
Kristen
Canucks.
Kristen Reed hired again.
Right. Donate generously to all the Canucks charities.
Is there some story behind that?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll talk about this later.
And even then, after having gone in, like, personally shaking hands to every person in the rink, and bought them a beer, only then might they consider putting them up in the Ring of Honor.
So the point of this whole exercise was to demonstrate, I feel, that if ever there's a year, and this is me talking to the good Lord upstairs, the hockey gods upstairs, whatever deity it is that you worship, if ever there is a year, the Vancouver Canucks, and I feel like I say this every freaking year, whatever there was a year that the Canucks deserve to win the NHL draft lottery, it is this year.
With the draft in Vancouver, with Quinn Hughes' brother at the top.
Like,
it's got to be. Like,
it
it's
is
not
a
gonna happen,
celestial but. Lining of the stars.
I will actually cry if they win. I can, like, I'm starting to tear up now thinking about it.
Let me tell you this. Fast forward to June. Jim Benning has picked number one. The grace of God is given number one. Quinn Hughes hands younger brother Jack Hughes that Canucks jersey that says J. Hughes on it. Are you saying that wouldn't get you jacked up?
That would be the greatest moment in Canucks history.
I am not prepared to see the gifts that you will share in Discord upon that taking place. But so last time the Canucks had the draft here in Vancouver.
Michael Grabner.
Was that the Grabner draft?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was the Patrick White draft. Good times.
Do you trust Jim Benning to take Hughes?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So here we go. We'll talk about this. And this is a way too soon conversation. I've had this with some friends. But if the Canucks had first overall, how bad would it look if we took Kaapo Kakko over Jack Hughes? Regardless of who you have, 1-2, and we admit it is closer. But it would look bad on Quinn Hughes for us to spurn his brother and take Kaapo Kakko.
For that reason, that just would never happen. It's not even worth talking about. It's not going to happen.
If we get second overall, though, let me ask you this.
Demko and second.
Would you move? What would you move to move up to one and guarantee yourself Jack Hughes? Like, let's say it's an obscure team like Minnesota who could use help anywhere. Like, they would welcome taking Kakko or Hughes, that it's so super close for them. What would it take for you to move up from 2 to 1? Would you trade this year second as well?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. You wouldn't? For a potential franchise-changing player.
Well, Kakko could be a franchise-changing player too.
Yeah, that's fair.
You talk about the process and how long it has taken for us to get this far.
I think from a business perspective, the marketing
that's
value,
I think the part of it
we cannot
after
ignore
the
that.
Twins, like it would be too perfect.
You cannot ignore that, sure, but from a hockey perspective, is it really worth
strictly hockey? No, I would not do that because the gap isn't big enough for a high second round pick difference, right?
Exactly.
But for when you take in the business aspect of it, yes, like they're, you know, maybe 3-1. Yeah. I would consider that more because there's a much bigger gap between Kako and, say, Cousins or Byram or whoever else than there is for 1 and 2.
So does Jim Benning have the ability to Brian Burke this draft?
No.
Well, Fox I'm just going to stop it on the Athletics a while ago. It would take a lot of wheeling and dealing, but
he barely has the mental capacity to make one trade, let alone the multiple it might require.
I have to be honest. If he were to go and Brian Burke this, and, you know, sure, maybe mortgage a little bit of the future to get out to the top of the podium, I'd give him a pass for the season. I actually think that would show me that he has the temerity to actually make, you know, bold decisions. And, you know, I know GM Jim Benning listens to our podcast and is looking for ways to...
He downloads and listens.
...to impress both Adam and I, who constantly, you know, call for his immediate replacement and Lawrence Gilman to be brought back, but...
Doesn't matter, though, because we're picking 9th, so...
Okay, so I'll tell you what. This is how we're going to end the show just before. We're going to do one simulation. And one only. And what happens will be what happens in the real draft. The Canucks, with their 5% chance at winning first overall, 16% chance at picking in the top 3, this lottery simulator says that the Canucks will move down 2 spots and pick 11th overall, with Philadelphia, Chicago, and Detroit picking 1, 2, and 3.
Yikes. Do it again.
Yeah, how many times does it take? Is it like, you know, like, again, at the Whitecaps match, you pick a color smash your phone?
There have been a couple times in Discord where some of our Discord members will post screen grabs of what they did. They did it one time, the Canucks would pick 1, and then be like, I'm not touching this thing until the 9th. Okay, I'll do it one more time, just for Adam's sake. Here we go. Oh, God!
Where
it was even worse! Edmonton is picking first overall.
Which site are you using?
I'm using Tankathon.
Tankathon? Okay.
And the Canucks have moved down 1 spot. Like, 2 simulations, we've moved down twice.
Does it matter which simulator you're using? Like, does that come into play?
No, Christopher, the algorithm does not change from site
to
site.
I'm just thinking, like, you know, if you smash your button a few times or you do it once, like...
What is your go-to simulator?
I don't, because, see, for me, I know I have absolutely no control over how many times I hit enter, smash a mouse.
Yeah, tell that to Jim Benning, who used that once or twice, though.
You think Jim Benning can actually use something like Cap Friendly?
I'm surprised he even knows how to log on to his computer.
You know what? I just want to say that the Canucks moved down to 11th in that first simulation you did.
Yeah.
They have 4.3% chance of that happening. So there's a higher chance they get first overall than they move down to 11th.
That's putting a positive spin on things. Chris, as we wrap things up here in the C4 podcast, how about you tell people where they can find us?
Well, hello, you found us. But if for some reason you found us and still don't know where to find us, we're available every which way that you can subscribe. So again, all the major podcast networks have us. It is the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast. It's heard on Overtime Media and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. As far as looking for us on Twitter, however, it's at the C4 Podcast. And Facebook, it's Facebook.com/C4Podcast. Let's see, individually, Anna Forsyth, who's already bugged out for the evening. She's at A4Size03.
Did you see, by the way, she took the Vacchio jersey to Rogers Arena and then went on a skate with it?
Yeah.
Now it's like all
sweaty.
It's
now
all sweaty and sullied.
And you don't like, actually, here's a question. Like, jerseys like
she
that.
Better pay for our dry cleaning when I get that.
It needs to be dry cleaned. That's not like you throw it in the washing machine at the laundromat.
My mom did that with my first ever Canucks jersey, and it got creased down the middle, and I will never forgive her for that.
Yeah, it's got to be done right. So we're going to have to have a little chat with Ms. Forsyth. But as we wrap this episode up, Adam, who is at AdamFOC on the Twitters, final words of wisdom?
Not a whole lot more to say, really. I am horribly nervous and totally resigned to have a terrible day tomorrow afternoon. But here's hoping.
Are we on me?
Yeah, well, I thought you were going to talk. You suddenly, you know, had that twinkle in your eye.
I always have that twinkle in my eye before it fades after every draft lottery.
Yeah, another year of disappointment on and off the ice.
I'm just going to be... I think, actually, this year, at this year's draft lottery, I'll actually be in the presence with my missus, so she'll actually get to see.
I thought we were going to be together.
Well, she'll probably be able to see that exact moment when my heart stops beating.
Yes.
So that was Matt Lee at Matt Lee underscore 61. Are we going to see a picture of you and Mrs. Producer, you know, hugging it out as you cry on her shoulder?
No, I got to be strong. She'll bully me if I cry in front of her.
Does she follow the
Canucks? She also says, because I told her I would cry tears of joy if the Canucks won the Stanley Cup. And she actually made fun of me for that.
Does she follow hockey?
Yeah, a little bit. She's from Winnipeg, so she obviously follows the Jets a little closely.
Okay, so she's more like, she's one of the people that shouts, you know, True North during the anthem?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I don't even think she does that.
No? Well, then she's not that big of a
Jets fan. She only knows that Lonnie plays for the Jets as well.
Interesting.
She's a fair-weather Jets fan.
Interesting. Lots of those Canucks fan here, too. As far as myself, Chris Golden at Light Force, I'm just looking forward to the fact that we're going to continue bringing you episodes throughout the offseason, much different than the last 5.5. This will be actually, this summer, will have been on the air for 6 freaking years. The C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast is 6 years old this summer, so I'll have to do something special. But we are going to be changing our episode cadence coming into May. You're going to see us drop to bi-weekly, which is better than no weekly, which is what it was in the last few years. We're going to probably talk a little bit about playoff hockey, any Canucks news that might come out in the mix, but I think we're probably going to have a whole lot more fun, which means Matt Lee is going to have a real angry summer. Yeah, shake your head all you want. But on behalf of Matt, Anna, Adam, and myself, Chris, I'm going to sign off this episode with 2 words to sign off every single one, and that is, we're out.